with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. On leaving the synagogue, Jesus entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Simon's mother-in-law lay sick with a fever. They immediately told him about her. He approached, grasped her hand, and helped her up. Then the fever left her, and she waited on them. When it was evening after sunset, they brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. The whole town was gathered at the door. He cured many who were sick with various diseases, and he drove out many demons, not permitting them to speak because they knew him. Rising very early before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. Simon and those who were with him pursued him, and on finding him said, "Everyone is looking for you." He told them, "Let us go on to the nearby villages that I may preach there also. For this purpose have I come." So he went into their synagogues, preaching and driving out demons throughout the whole of Galilee. The Gospel of the Lord. This morning, Holy Mother Church gives us a gospel passage which is 10 verses long. And in those 10 verses, we hear our Blessed Lord perform four separate actions that are worthy of our consideration. He healed, he exorcised, not exorcised, but exorcised demons. He prayed and he preached. Okay, so he healed, he exorcised demons. He prayed and he preached. Now, I suppose on one level, you could read and hear that gospel, take it a little bit of a distance from yourself and appreciate it and say, yes, it's very nice. These are things that I expect Jesus to do. I've heard this gospel passage before. This makes sense. You may appreciate our Lord's power, his power to heal, his power to exorcise demons, the power of his preaching. You may be impressed by his mercy and his compassion for the sick and those who are ill, his willingness to help anyone at any time for really any reason. And you may also be impressed by his self-insertion into the human condition. I mean, all of these things are noteworthy. In fact, in a way, as Christians, we kind of take this for granted. This is what Jesus does. This is what he's all about. And I suppose we could just stop there. And say, that's very nice. Just, you know, let's appreciate that for a moment. Have a moment of silence. And let's just move on to the creed. But there's really a lot more to it than that for us who want to imitate Christ. And again, we could imitate him in all of these different things that I just mentioned. His compassion, his willingness to help, his insertion into the human condition, his desire to roll up his sleeves and sort of get dirty and get into the lives of people when invited. Those are all things we can appreciate. But you might want to ask yourself this morning if you've ever thought of yourself as a healer or someone who exorcises demons or someone who prays or someone who preaches. Now, many of you know I teach at the seminary down the street, and all of the men that we're training to become priests are getting ready for exactly this kind of work. And we might just say, well, that's the work of priests and religious. That's very fine. But, you know, us lay people in the pews, you know, we've got our busy lives to lead. This is not stuff that we should be involved in. That's not true. Each of you has an opportunity, an ability, whether you realize it or not, to heal. Yes, you actually have an ability in some mitigated way to exorcise demons. That might get your attention. You have certainly the capacity to preach. And you have the capacity to pray. Let me name some examples. First of all, in healing. Now, there are some obvious examples of that. My physical therapist is here this morning. She's helping me heal from a back injury. Okay? But, and some of you are involved in medical professions, in altruistic kinds of work. Right? Our little Sisters of the Poor, for example, do that very, very beautifully in their mission. They'll be speaking to us at the end of Mass. But there are other ways that healing has to occur. Think about families. Look how much estrangement there is in families. I mean, people who don't get along. mean, ask yourself, where are you in that? Are you in a camp or two? I mean, one of the things that I really enjoy as being a priest in my own family is that I'm in nobody's camp. I'm just father. Right? And no one wants me to take sides. I don't want to take sides. Right? But ask yourself, I mean, am I someone who unifies people who are divided? Or am I one to kind of exacerbate already pre-existing problems in families? Am I trying to add fuel to the fire? Or am I a healer, a reconciler, a uniter? And if I'm a uniter, am I uniting people in truth? I think there are a lot of people who don't like to say anything for fear of conflict. And yet, that actually adds more problems. Because assent, silence is assent, isn't it? When you're silent in the face of something where you need to say something in opposition to that, and you remain silent, you are giving assent to what is going on. So it's not just unity for unity's sake. That could be a false unity. But it's actually a unity based in the truth of the gospel. Ask yourself, do you work to reconcile the estranged among the people that you know? The second, of course, is exorcisms. Now, I know when I say the word exorcism, people get all riled up because they're expecting to see, you know, children with their heads spinning around over their shoulders, okay, and contracted faces, and things that we see in television and on Hollywood. That's not what we're talking about here. Jesus did that. He was healing that. In fact, a lot of people don't know this, but he in the Gospels does more exorcisms than he does physical healings. If you line up all of the cures that Jesus does, most of them are spiritual. Just a handful of them actually are the physical healings. And Blessed Teresa of Calcutta, Mother Teresa used to say, the greatest miracles occurring in the world are not physical healings, they're conversions. What's the number one way we can participate in exorcisms? Confession. Confession. That's the number one way. That's where we exorcise demons. That's where actually the church exorcises demons. Through the ministry of the church in the priesthood, she actually absolves sins. And sins are forgiven. The demons are driven away. Hopefully with a fortitude internally given to the penitent that they will not fall into that sin again. And even if they do fall into that sin again, there is that grace given by the sacrament to fortify them and to say, okay, I got to stop and I got to go back to confession. It's the type of moral courage required not to go along with the rest of the crowd. I have this struggle a lot today with my young adults that I minister to, even here and at a distance, right? Many times when they're getting ready for spending a life together, what's the current trend today, right? 4 out of 5 couples will live together before marriage. But the church says that's not good for you morally. It's not good for your soul. It's not a loving thing to do if you're living together before marriage. Again, it's the sacrament of penance, that return to the Father's house, which exorcises those demons and begins healing. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on prayer today, but just to make one mention of what happens here. You have the benefit in this parish, whether you belong to this parish or not, makes no difference. Here at this altar, all night, all day, every day, you have adoration of the Eucharist, adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. And I have to tell you, you know, it's really heartening to come in here at random times during the week and find 4 or 5 people just praying quietly, spending time. In the world of prayer, there are 4 different types. Adoration, contrition, which is like confession, sorrow for sin, thanksgiving, and supplication. ACTS, adoration, contrition, thanksgiving, and supplication. They're in a particular order. The first posture of prayer must be adoration. It has to be adoration first. When we begin Mass, the greatest prayer of the church, what's the first thing we do? We make a sign of adoration by crossing ourselves. What's the next move? Contrition for sins. I confess. And the rest of the Mass follows from that. That economy, that system is in place. So if you're not in the habit of even coming in here, just once a week, I'm not joking, between errands, you know, you go to your CVS, you get what you get, and then you stop in, and then you go, you know, to the high school to pick up your kids from practice, whatever. You just stop in for 5 minutes just to adore. You don't have to ask for anything. Just to say hello. just to spend some time with the alone who sits here day and night thirsting for our love. And then finally, have you thought of yourself as a preacher? Probably not. St. Francis of Assisi's golden rule applies here, does it not? Preach your whole life, but only use words when necessary. In other words, do people know you in your school, in your office, where you are in your life, as being Catholic? Do they know that? And again, it's not that you stand in a street corner or maybe in your office, in your cubicle, you have a shrine set up. Okay, although that would be kind of edifying, I suppose. All right, with a little kneeler and votive candles, and people can come by and, you know, make a visit, okay, to an icon, for example. I'm not talking about that. In the manner of the way you carry yourself in your professional life, do people know you to be Catholic? Do they know that there's anything distinctively Catholic about that? I know that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, because the moment we try to separate ourselves from the rest, there's this internal governor that says, well, aren't we trying to be elite? No, we're not trying to be elite. We actually set ourselves aside as Catholics in the world because we want people to know that we are serious about living our Christian faith, and we are here to serve. We are here to love. We are here to be here for others. That's what the distinctive quality is. But remember, there are lots of really good people doing lots of really good things in the world. Let's not dismiss that. That's absolutely true, and that needs to be affirmed, and it needs to be recognized. But ask yourself, as a Catholic, is there something distinctive that I bring to the conversation that lots of other do-gooders in the world don't? What can I contribute? Again, no preaching with words. Live it. When people see it, they will know. And if you can encourage people, invite people into your faith life to share. I mean, you can't get an argument about your experience. You don't have to argue about morality. You don't have to argue about doctrine. You can talk about your own relationship with the Lord. Are you willing to share that with someone? To be open about that with someone? That can be a very effective form of preaching without ever standing where I am right now. So again, ask yourself. He healed. He exercised. He prayed. And he preached. What am I doing about those four things in my life? Four actions that Jesus did throughout his entire 3-year preaching itinerary career in the Holy Land. We have a whole lifetime ahead of us to do those things. Let us pray that we are equal to the task that Jesus sets before us as he goes about doing the Father's will.